I was so impressed with myself. And I'm like, oh, and then, yeah, that. So I want to show you guys. I might type this out. I have a cheat sheet. I can't pronounce those words. You know, they look like what we think they're supposed to be, like king that of Assyria, Senachrib. Sennacherib? No. It's Sennacherib. And it's like, oh, okay. Here's a name. This is the name of a queen in Jerusalem of the Maccabees. And her name was, you can pronounce it one of two ways, Salome or Salome. And she expanded the return of Judah more than any of the male kings did. This is during the Maccabee revolt. We'll talk about that. Hopefully we'll get there. But anyway, I wanted you guys to know that I'll have to have my cheat sheet here. And this is what takes me maybe hours. I might spend 2 hours a day just writing the word out and then going into my app and a Bible pronunciation app and saying, how do you spell P-T-O-L-E-M-I-E-S? And it's either a man or a woman will come on and say, Telemese. It's like, but anyway, we knew from lesson 9, all the way back to 1st and 2nd Kings about the Assyrian judgment. And just a quick reminder of why there was a judgment on Israel under the United Kingdom of with Solomon. He did not treat the 10 tribes in the northern part of Israel the same as he did Jerusalem and the southern tribes. Not that he was nasty just to them, but he taxed his people a lot. When his son... I have so many names in my head. When his son came to power, Rehoboam, he taxed him even more. They sent a group of people from all the tribes to the new king, Solomon's son, and said, your dad had a heavy yoke on us. Could you lighten it up? And he's like, no, I'm going to make it even worse. So they rebelled. There was a civil war, a rebellion, and that's what split the kingdom. So in the north, not one king was righteous. They were very, very, the whole kingdom became very much corrupt and apostate and intermarriage. And so God brought judgment on the whole nation of Israel, but the northern kingdom was invaded first and taken over very easily. Their kingdom was Samaria, and the Assyrians completely demolished it. And they took other villages and towns around. They really desolated the northern kingdom, but there was still a little remnant. And what Assyria did, they were known as brutal, violent, torturous conquerors. They would move, let's say they conquered Washington, and they would take people from Washington who lived, who weren't, you know, killed in or tortured, and they would move them into Canonsburg and tell the Canonsburg people, you have to have these people, you know, living here. So they became mixed and they assimilated and the whole nine yards. So what was happening at that time in the southern kingdom in Jerusalem, the king made sort of like a peace deal and said, I'll pay you a tribute and taxes every year if you don't invade. Well, after a while, they rebelled too. They were tired of that. And so Assyria was held off, but then came the Babylonian judgment, because now the southern kingdom is becoming corrupt. And God, the Babylonians, the Syrian kingdom in the ancient world was the superpower. They were the United States. And then internal turmoil Say it for me.
Turmoil.
Turmoil. I came just in time. Turmoil.
There you go.
Close that door, Chris. If you don't mind.
Internal turmoil. And fight for power broke the nation down. Corruption broke the nation down. And the Babylonians, and they were both from Mesopotamia. Assyria was from northern Mesopotamia, Babylon from southern. And they started to become a stronger nation. And they took over the Assyrians, and they were knocking at Jerusalem's, at Judah's door. And what had happened previous to that is the king of Israel and Syria wanted the king of Judah to join them to fight the Assyrians, and he sort of acted like he might want to do that, and then he said no, and he pleaded with the Assyrians, you know, hey, I want to be on your side. So that's another reason why the southern kingdom hadn't been taken over in the first judgment, which was Assyria. But getting back to Babylon, Nebuchadnezzar came in, and good King Hezekiah with Isaiah the prophet praying. Nebuchadnezzar took over a lot of Judah, but he couldn't take the city of Jerusalem at first because of Nebuchadnezzar. And Nebuchadnezzar did really well. You know, he was a righteous king. He cleaned things up. But he had one issue, and that was pride. And God allowed this to happen to test his heart. A envoy, including the king of Nebuchadnezzar, the son of Nebuchadnezzar, came to Jerusalem, and Hezekiah said, come and look at everything I have. He showed him everything. All the stuff in the temple, all his wealth and riches, the beautiful Jerusalem city, and they went back and said, we want that. And they came and they took it. And that was the destruction of the first temple. And they took everything. Solomon had made shields of gold that were only wore by the soldiers that protected the temple. Taken. Everything. And Jerusalem was not destroyed like it was in the 70 AD with Rome. But it was hardly the kingdom that we knew. And don't think that the Babylonians took the Israelites into exile all at one time. It was waves. When they first invaded, that they couldn't take Jerusalem, they did take royalty, the royal families and the elites and the learned back to Babylon. And that's when Daniel, Meshach, Shadrach, and Abednego went. They were 17 years old around that age. And then the second wave came when they did attack Jerusalem, and they took more people into Babylon. And then the third wave when they completely destroyed Jerusalem and the temple. And it was, like when you read about it, it was years. It took years for these kind of things to happen. It's not like, well, I shouldn't say not like today. Look, the war in Ukraine has been a couple years, and 1 million Ukrainians have died. That includes soldiers and civilians, they said. But it's just unbelievable. Just a little footnote off of that. Donald Trump, and I'm not being political or tooting his horn, but man, things are starting to look up because he has met with just yesterday and the day before, because Notre Dame, the cathedral, has opened. I don't know if any of you are getting feed on your Facebook, but oh my gosh, the celebration and the beauty of it being restored. But anyway, Donald Trump has met with the French president, who's having trouble in France, and with Zelensky, and he met with the Prime Minister of Canada, who said, you can't put tariffs on our stuff. We can't afford it. And Donald Trump said, well, it looks like Canada's going to become the 51st state of America.
51 states.
Yeah. They want to make it two, because they're so liberal in the East and more conservative in the West. So he said, we can make two states.
Well, you do know that Canada is the largest country in the world, but the one of the least populated, mm-hmm. and the Canadian population borders the United States, and that's where something like 79% of their people live, because yeah. Canada is very much inhabitable.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's get back to the lesson. So, and that was just from my head. So, during this time, and this is what I wrote about all the prophets. It was so beautiful. Thank goodness for this and websites. But my study Bible, that big thick thing that I just can't carry around anymore, has so much information too. 16 different prophets were involved in the northern and in the southern kingdom trying to get them returned back to God. He had so much patience with these people. I hope he has so much with us. When you get into the Old Testament, the major and the minor prophets all dealt with the different kings and kingdoms, whether it was in the north or the south. But the Israelites remained unfaithful and unloyal, and then judgment came. We already talked about that. I'm sorry about having to jump around here.
No problem.
About King Hezekiah.
When you read about all them kings, and like you say, how many of them were corrupted, it just goes to show you that you get one person in power and it extends for too long a period of time, then corruption will eat away all of their reasoning. And that is the primary reason why in 1797 that George Washington refused to run for a third term.
Yeah.
Because he says it's time for another person to come in and take control.
Yeah.
One person in control for too much time causes corruption.
Yes. I was.
And then he was a very wise person in knowing that.
They needed to put term limits in.
I think that's coming. This is this book that mm-hmm. Susan gave me. This is a list on this side of the kings of Israel, and on this side, the kings of Judah. It starts out with Jeroboam, who, he was struck down by God. And then it goes all the way down to Hosea. And here's what it says. Did evil. And they either they were struck down by God, or they were killed by the next king. One, suicide. Ahab fatally wounded in battle, killed by Jehu, natural causes, but they were killing each other to gain control. Over here in Judah, you see Rehoboam, natural cause, all the way down, but they were killed by Jehu and their army, that was a queen, killed by officials, skin diseases, and then the last four died in Babylon. And it starts out, did evil, mm-hmm. and then Asa did right, Jehoshaphat did right, all the other ones did evil until we get to Joash, Uriah did right. There are some, Hezekiah did right. And then his son, Manasseh, does evil. Oh, he was a bad one. And then Joash did right, did evil. But anyway, what I had put in my lesson was all the different prophets who were dealing with each nation. And I don't have it in these notes, but how the prophets also dealt with the Israelites when they were in captivity and exile in Babylon. We don't know anything about the Assyrian judgment and the 10 tribes. They're lost to history. There's really no account of them. They seem to have just been swallowed up, assimilated with the countries that they were exiled to. Genetically,
God's warnings to do not assimilate with these people.
Right. And there are genetic, now that we can do that kind of thing, there are genetic proof that there are Israelites in Africa, and not just Egypt, because we know the Israelites, not only with Joseph and Jacob in Israel, I mean Egypt, but when the invasion of Assyria and Babylon were happening, the Jewish people were running to Egypt. And not because they wanted to go back. We're talking hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years before the Exodus from Egypt. But they went back. That's why when Alexander the Great conquered the Babylonians, because he's the next ruler over Israel, there were so many Israelites in Egypt. And he built the city of Alexandria. And he wanted it to be the world at that time. He wanted it to be the world center of education and literature and knowledge. And that's where we get the Septuagint Bible translation. Because so many Greeks had lost Hebrew, their Hebrew language. I mean, so many Israelites had lost their Hebrew language, and they were speaking Greek, and they couldn't read their Torah. So 72 learned Jewish men translated the Hebrew, who still knew Hebrew, translated the Hebrew Bible into the Greek Septuagint, which we use today. Mm-hmm. So that's just blows my mind about that. Okay. There were actually, I was telling you about the Babylonian invasions, there were actually three of them. In the first one, I had already said, they took most of the leaders, and they allowed Israel to continue having their own kings rule. I mean, Judah. But the king that was taken into Babylon was Jehoiakim, and he rebelled against Nebuchadnezzar, so there was a second attack on Israel. And in that one, Ezekiel the prophet was removed from Judah, and he went to Babylon. And then in the third one, Nebuchadnezzar had had enough of the Jews, and that's when he destroyed Jerusalem and the temple. It took 3 years. And that's when the majority of people were taken into exile, and they were left in exile for 70 years. And that allowed the land of Israel, which was called Judah then, and then Judea, but I keep calling it Israel. That 70-year rest allowed that land to like reproduce and repair itself, so that when the Jewish people came back under the Persian conquest, of course, houses and everything were destroyed, but they were still able to be an agricultural country again. Okay. And the prophets during this exile were Jeremiah, Zephaniah, Joel, Obadiah, Habakkuk, Ezekiel, and Daniel. So, Assyria, Babylon, now here comes the Persian, and the Medes. In the beginning of this conquest and the building up of Persia, it was actually these two nations, the Medes and the Persians and the Medes. The Persian Empire is Iran today. And the Persians had a different mindset, especially their king at the time of the takeover of Judah, Cyrus. He had a mindset that if I conquer Washington, PA, I'm going to leave the mayor in there. Because they know what they need to know. And they're under my thumb, but I'm leaving the people alone. From what history knows also about Cyrus, he had a good heart. He wasn't an example of the Assyrians and the Babylonians, who, you know, enslaved people, tortured them, killed them. When he came to power and had conquered the Babylonians, Cyrus encouraged all the people of all the different nations who had been brought to Babylon. Cyrus actually moved his capital then to Babylon. Babylon was a gorgeous, gorgeous city. They actually had one of the seven wonders of the world, the gardens.
Hanging gardens.
Yeah. So, you know, they didn't Persia didn't destroy Babylon. They moved into it. But Cyrus allowed all these conquered peoples, including the Jews, to go back to their nations. And God moved on this man. He used this man who was not Jewish, wasn't a follower of Yahweh. And he even gave them monies and documents so that other people living in that area would know, hey, the king told us to come home and build our temple and build our walls and rebuild our city. He financed it. So, the first governor of the exiled Jews going back to rebuild the temple was a descendant of David's throne, and his name was Zerubbabel. And Joshua the priest went back with him. And in the beginning, the rebuilding was full of zest, and people were gung-ho. And then the Samaritans, because Samaria was the northern kingdom's capital, and there were people still now, you know, repopulating that area, they offered to help rebuild the temple for the returning Jews. And the Jewish people were like, no, you're mixed breeds. You're not a true Jew. You're not touching the temple. So the Samaritans got mad, and they started trouble. They complained to the Persian authorities. They don't have the right building permit. they're doing this and they're doing that. They delayed it to the point that the Israelites gave up, and they worried more about building the wall and rebuilding their home. So the temple rebuild was put off. And the prophets of that day were encouraging them, keep building, because once you build that temple to God, He's going to bless you. Mm-hmm. And they were like, yeah, but I need a bathroom. So they didn't do that. The prophets there were Hagar and Zechariah. Okay.
I think they focused on the wall, didn't they?
I'm sorry?
Didn't they focus on the wall?
Yes, they did.
And at the time, they were more worried about their safety and protection than they were about pleasing God.
Right, and that's exactly
it. Their earthly eyes were seeing these people around them, and they were worried about that, and weren't putting their faith and trust in God.
And that was it, exactly.
That was the whole crux of the matter.
That was it. You are so right. Thank you for that. Okay, we said that, blah, blah, blah. A historical look at the time of the Old Testament prophets is very complex. To summarize the events of this time in history, there were four major periods in rebuilding Israel. After the Babylonian judgment and the return of the exile, rebuilding the temple and the city, and still remaining under Persian control, they couldn't get their act together. Even though they came home, all the nations under Persia, when they went back to their lands, they were still under Persian control. But they were allowed to appoint who they wanted. This is where Judaism changed to what we know it to be today, where before it was all about the temple and the sacrifices and everything. This is where we ended up getting the Pharisees, the Sadducees, the Sanhedrin, synagogues. That didn't exist prior to the destruction of the Second Temple. So the Old Testament ends with a lot of prophecy, a lot of warnings, and then that's 400 years of silence. They call that the intertestamental period. And people take that as God was silent. Nothing was happening. Everything that needed to be in place for Jesus Christ to enter the world was happening in those 400 years. And, you know, I know this is going to sound weird to you guys, but it was like a light bulb went off for me. Because I've always heard so many pastors say the 400 years of silence, and I've always thought God must have, like, been off somewhere else. He wasn't paying attention.
They call it the silence because there were no active
prophetic
prophets
right
working
right.
and speaking to the people.
Right.
But and, God still had his hand on what was going on.
And that's what he was, that's what he was doing. So here's what was happening. Instead of prophets, what the Jewish people relied on were their Pharisees and their Sadducees, who became political and religious leaders. In fact, even into Jesus' day, we know even though Rome had a crushing oppression on the people still looked to the high priest for all their answers and their mm-hmm. and their laws and everything. It was just so interesting. I got out of, I don't want this to sound terrible, especially on tape, but I left what I was reading in the Bible and I was Googling, well, what happened during that time? And it was really interesting how God, his hand was still all over everything. So we're in the Persian period and the post-exile period, and all this stuff is happening. So the Persians, Assyrians, Babylonians, Persians, and who took over after that? Alexander the Great. We always think he's Greek, but he was really a Macedonian. He was from Macedonia. They took over the Greek world, but he must have had some serious ADHD, because all he wanted to do was fight, and he was a magnificent military leader, but he also wanted education and scholarship, and he loved the Hebrew scriptures, and under his reign, which was very short, because he died at age 33, and there are 15 different reasons why he died unexpectedly, including poisoning, his troops killing him because they were like, we've been at war for 20 years, we want to go home. He's like, no, let's fight on. But typhoid fever, all kinds of different reasons why they think that he died. But after he died, there was no king to take over the Macedonian Empire. So the empire was divided into four sections under four... Don't you hate when that happens? Under four of his generals. And then they had successors after him. And eventually this Achaemenid Empire just collapsed. The Greeks collapsed. But they were, during their time, they were a strong, strong influence in the ancient world. Because by now, almost everyone speaks Greek. And the Greeks are looked at as people that are very learned. You know, they would, today, they would be our tech people and our, you know, our nerds and our highly intellectual. But let's talk about the Second Temple. After the return to Judah and eventually rebuilding the temple, it was pale in comparison to Solomon. But it was the best that they could do at that time. And I want you to remember that because of the guy that comes in and makes it this beautiful temple that then is destroyed again. So the Second Temple period went from returning from Babylon under the Persian influence until Herod completed that beautiful rebuild of the temple, and he did it out of very selfish, mean ways. And then AD 70, Rome destroyed that temple. And when you go to Israel today, which is on my bucket list, you can see remnants of how it must have really been in its heyday. Okay, let me see where I'm at. Thank you, Lord, for letting me. Oh, I want to tell you the rulers of the after Alexander. Here we go. And the first guy, he did really well, by the way. His name is Ptolemies. But this is how you spell it. Must be Greek. Ptolemies. And he was from Egypt. And he did okay. He expanded the land that Judah, and it was now called Judea, could live in. He gave them more land back. And then after him were the Seleucids of Syria. And oh my, there was a big rebellion, and here is why. Antiochus Epiphanes was one of the other Hellenistic kings at this time, because Alexander's empire became known as the Hellenistic Empire. Well, this Antioch Epiphanes, where we get the word epiphany, he defiled the temple in Judah, in Judea, as they called it. They called it Palestine or Judea then. He set up the god of the Hellenistic Empire, Zeus, in the temple of God, and he slaughtered a pig there. And that was enough. The Jewish people had had enough, and enter in a priest named Matthias. Matthias was one of the priests, and he and his sons became known as the Maccabees, which means hammer in Israel, in Hebrew. And his sons' names were John, Hyrcanus, Astrobulus the first, and Alexander Janaeus, and they formed the Hasmonean dynasty. For 24 years, Judea was not under the Seleucids of Syria. They took it back. So, and the reason that's so important is, Israel, the land of Israel, has always had Jewish people in it and have had Jewish people ruling in it. So the Hasmonean dynasty lasted about 24 years, and their last ruler was a queen, Salome Alexandra, and she even pushed the borders further and grew Judea into a bigger Jewish nation. So now we have the Hasmoneans, who are breaking away from the Hellenistic Alexander's Empire, enter in Rome. They've been over here in the boot, getting bigger and stronger. They became a powerful military. And the general Pompey of the Roman Empire conquered Judea. And they put in place the emperor of Rome, the first emperor of Rome, put in place in Judea or Palestine a man named Herod, who was not Jewish. He was an Edomite, and he was a convert to Judaism, but he wasn't a very strong one. Oh, he was a mess. Let me tell you about what he did real quick. Get back into my notes. Herod, and we know him as Herod the Great, and we do know that he refurbished, expanded, rebuilt almost this beautiful temple. He did that to get the Jewish people on his side, because if he was going to rule in Judea and Palestine, he didn't want the people rebelling against him. They had just put down the Maccabee and that dynasty. So he also married a Hasmonean princess that came from Salome Alexandra's line, and her name was Mariamne. Married her, and when he became established and people liked him, the Jews liked him, he had her and two of their sons killed because he was so paranoid about keeping power. We know about Herod and his brother's wife, Herodian, that he was hooked up with. Was it Herodian? Yeah. Yeah, I think so. You know, her daughter danced, and they had John the Baptist beheaded. Okay. So that's Herod, and we're going to keep that in mind, because next week we're going to talk about how Israel looked in Jesus' day, and then go into some world history. But during that time, we had four powerful political, religious factions develop among the Israeli people. Am I making sense? Mm-hmm. All right. These are the five, and we're going to start with this. These are the five political, religious factions that were born during this 400 years of silence. One, the Sadducees. They were wealthy, political people, and they did only agree with the Torah, did not believe in resurrection and life after death. And they were pretty snobby. Like, if it worked out for them, they were all for it. Mm-hmm. We can think about America today, and we know there are political powers, religious powers, same way. And then the Pharisees came into power. They placed heavy, heavy religious burdens on the people. They made the human traditions that were almost impossible to follow. And, you know, they would be hard on the people but not keep those man-made traditions themselves. These were the Pharisees. Then there were the Essenes. These were isolationists. They were like a sect, like a cult. They rejected both the Jewish and the Hellenistic society. And these political religious parties came about through Hellenistic influences. Again, we're seeing Israel keeps assimilating or adopting, you know, outside nations' practices. This sect lived in the desert communities, and that's where we get Qumran, where the Dead Sea Scrolls were found. They were the ones that wrote that. They were scribes. But they also were like monks. They didn't want anything to do with those people. And then the Herodians, this is the fourth political religious faction that came to power. They were Jew by name only. They were appointed by Rome to rule, and they would pretend to be Jewish, but they were puppet rulers. And we know that Herod, you know, what a man he was. He had the baby boys killed because he was so worried that Jesus, you know, he had heard this rumor about a king being born. He was not going to lose his power. And then the last group, the fifth group, were the Zealots. And we know that at least one of Jesus' disciples was a Zealot. These were revolutionaries who were dedicated in overthrowing Rome by any means necessary. Mm-hmm. So, in exile, temple worship was non-existent. But in Babylon, and then even a little bit in Persia before they returned, and they returned in waves from Persia, they didn't all come at one time, they were able to develop the type of Judaism that we see today, where a synagogue, which in the Greek word means a place to assemble, where the synagogue was weekly gathering places versus the certain times out of the year temple worship practices. So now we would see the Jews going weekly to the synagogue. And what was happening in the synagogue was the reading of the Torah, the teaching, and then prayer. Prayer became very, very strong during this period of time. Does that make sense to y'all?
Mm-hmm.
All right. I'm going to close there. I am not going to promise you that I'm going to go back and retype everything into this lesson. It will be a review. I can't do that to myself. I'm like, okay. You've got to go take a computer class because you're not going to be this dumb any longer.
Oh.
I don't know what happens, and sometimes, like, I do have a dear friend, and I, like, rebuked her in my head. She's like, you know, this is the enemy trying to keep you from getting this information out. But what I wanted to say to her is, I'm sitting in a class of people that probably know more than I do.
Oh, I don't think so.
And I do.
I would never think that.
But here is what is happening for me. I am gaining so much. I love Israel and the history of it and how God's hand has been on those people. Wait till you hear next week what happened in Spain. A lot of people don't realize Spain was a nation of people in the Ancient of Days. They came. They came out from the flood, and we're going to learn about the little tricky, the trick that Isabella and Ferdinand pulled on the Jews, and why America is the country that it is today. God uses everything, everything that happens, good, bad, and ugly, to what His plan is, what His will is. So, it's amazing. All right. Anything you want to say? We have 30 seconds.
I had a blip come across my desk a couple weeks ago. I printed it. Now I don't know what I've done with it. Just a short little blip about Columbus. Christopher Columbus's DNA profile shows that he has a percentage of Israeli blood in him.
Yes, yeah. Yes, he does. That was.
So he come from a family. Mm-hmm. I forget what kind of, they called it some kind of Jews. I don't remember what it was, but
I can't say it now. I have that in my study, so we'll talk about that next week.
Yeah, you probably got the same thing.